개새끼야!
Hello, listener. Welcome back. It's episode 18. Today we're looking at Chan-wook Park's The Handmaiden, doing a spoiler-free review of that, courtesy of Ethan. And then we're going to look back at his most famous work, according to us, Old Boy, 2003. I'm Jared.
Yep. I'm Ethan.
We're the hard men to please.
What's it to you? That's going to be my intro from now on.
That's pretty amazing. So this Handmaiden, what's she all about?
Sure. So this is, his most, recent movie.
It was directed by Chan-wook Park.
Chan-wook Park.
It was written by Seok-hyung Chung and Chan-wook Park. Seok-hyung Chung worked with him on Lady Vengeance and also, I think a movie called, I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay.
What?
Which is like, just an amazing, title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is his most recent one. Should still be in theaters by the time this is released. Saw it a few weeks back, but I guess to kind of just go over the plot real quick for the audience and you, because you have not seen it.
Nope, never.
Never will.
What's this about?
So this one is the story of a con man trying to convince a wealthy heiress to marry him instead of her creepy-ass uncle.
Wait, she's going to marry her uncle?
He's creepy, I told you.
Is this like modern times?
No, that's a great point. This takes place in Japan-occupied Korea. So, I'm not sure the exact
as we all know when that happened.
It would seem to be in the turn of the 20th century. Maybe like 30s based on the cars.
And the, around the turn of the century, 30 years later.
I'll just plug it all together. So it's older times. The story itself is based on a Victorian crime novel.
It's still kind of recent to be marrying your uncle. Oh, it's a Victorian era. Well, back then, marry your uncles all the time.
Right. Well, I mean, even within the context of the movie, it's still very weird.
Oh,
it's just that the uncle's rich as shit, and so he can do whatever he wants.
So we got a real Chinatown issue here, huh?
Because of Roman Polanski?
Because the rich guy can kind of, like, you know, fuck who he wants and do whatever he wants.
Yeah, kind of like that. So this con man, he's not like trying to save this heiress. He's, you know, a con man. His plan is to marry this woman, and then once her uncle dies, she's going to be left with all this money. So his goal is to have the heiress committed to a mental institution after they're married. So he gets
probably
money.
Easy to do back then.
Yeah, just
she's got a
quick and easy baker act.
Yeah. She's come down with a strong case of hysterical dame. Wait a second. So if she's getting the money from the uncle when he dies, why she got to marry him?
Why does she have to marry him?
Yeah, is it just because he's like young enough that it's going to be a while? She's got to live.
No, he's not young. I mean, I think in the context of the story, it's just kind of a fucked up relationship. And the heiress, is not allowed to even leave like the castle, so she's never been outside the castle.
Just like Princess Jasmine. What a relatable character now.
Yeah, Princess Jasmine had to marry, not her. I guess
Jafar.
She doesn't have an uncle. Jafar would be her uncle, maybe.
I mean, it wasn't her uncle, but it was still disturbing.
If we're trying to shoehorn this Aladdin reference in, we got to make it fit.
So who plays the genie character in this story?
The con man, his plan revolves around getting one of his pickpocket friends to pose as the heiress's handmaiden, and then she will be his inside man.
It's a real Dirty Rotten Scoundrels kind of setup. Right. Ruprecht the Monkey Boy?
Yeah, or like Inside Man.
Ah, does that happen in Inside Man?
I mean, not the love story part, but there is a man inside.
I've seen a lot of movies with a man inside. I'm going to say that.
I bet you have. A lot of shorter movies.
I don't watch the whole thing.
Don't really get much idea of what the plot is.
Yeah. But
there's definitely a man really, inside.
They're action films.
Yeah. A lot of movement.
So is it any good?
It's great.
Is it?
So, yeah, it's really good. It's a story, like I said, based off a crime novel, Victorian crime novel from 2012. And you can really just tell. I didn't know that it was based on the novel when I first watched it, but it makes so much sense just because it's such like a rich
Wait,
story.
Wait, it's based on a Victorian crime novel from 2012?
2002, I think is what 2000, it said.
Wait, what, in what way is that a Victorian? Am I unaware of this literary term?
Is it the novel? It takes place in Victorian times. It wasn't written.
Sorry
for the confusion.
No, okay, that all makes sense then.
Yeah.
So very class based boiler.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what's really cool about it because I mean it's taking that and then adapting it to you know obviously Eastern culture.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the movie, like I said, it's Japan occupied Korea. So there's like sub-themes of the class difference between Korea and Japan. So throughout the movie, it's all in subtitles, of course, and they have Korean and Japanese subtitles in different colors.
So oh, okay, because they're assuming you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, correctly, they're assuming that. And then throughout the whole movie, there's kind of just nods to the different, I guess, class and weight tied to using one of the languages versus the other.
Mm.
Like the heiress herself, all she does in the castle is like read, and she learns to read very like much like a high class lady in Japanese. But then when she gets his handmaiden who speaks Korean, she kind of like speaks Korean with her as like they get kind of more buddy buddy
girlfriends.
Yeah. So there's more, there's some of that, which kind of, you know, also ties into the last movie we saw, Arrival, which talked a lot about language and
those fucking high-class aliens lording it over us. We speak in circles. What do you use? Words?
You speak in circles and burps. What do you got?
Was that cum? Because that stuff was all coming out of their tentacles. Were they coming every time they did a word?
Yeah, that would make sense why they're always, like, doing a oh. I want to keep talking.
They're just going planet to planet just so they can jizz words out.
Speaking somewhat of jizz, this movie does have a lot of...
a lot of jizzum?
A lot of jizzums. I mean, like his other movies, there's, like, you know, it's beautifully shot. I mean, everything looks gorgeous, but like it's just so dark, and this movie is broken up to like three parts, and so with each part, it kind of shifts the narration between the different main characters. You kind of learn a little bit more and more as you go. Goodfellas style, but not quite. Goodfellas sticks to Henry Hill.
No, Karen also talks.
Oh yeah, that's right. Briefly though. And I forget that part. It's not as interesting. But there's a lot of reading of erotica in this movie.
Well,
very sexy.
It's going to put some asses in seats.
It has one of the most graphic sex scenes I've ever seen.
Really?
On film. Digitally, I've seen way worse.
On video, there's plenty. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, they get away with a lot there. I have a question. Do you think they're ever accused of Asian washing their films? If they're like, well, this was based on a like a Victorian. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Is it an English Victorian, like a British book? Or is it like.
That's what I'm led to believe because all the character names are like Roger and.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because they.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's from the UK. Yeah.
Because like Ghost in the Shell, they have, what's her name? Sarah Jessica Parker as the main as the main ghost. In that story, as I understand how the story goes.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, whitewashed story based on this manga. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be an Asian woman. It's like, well, yeah, but that's like all the people in like Infernal Affairs are Asian. And when we did it here, they made it like Bostonians. So,
yeah, I guess
white
it's different though.
Yeah, I find it annoying when it's like The Last Samurai is a white guy, or what, isn't Matt Damon at like the Great Wall of China movie or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's still to come out, so we'll see about that.
Yeah, see, that's fucking weird. But if you're going to do like, I don't know, just adapt some work from some other culture here, I mean, I guess it wouldn't hurt you to, you know, hire an actor that was of that culture, but
yeah, but with like Ghost in the Shell, that's, you're making a movie that's like directly based on the anime. If you make a different movie, like name it something different, and then it's like loosely adapted from that, then you can.
Well,
do
was
that.
It okay to have a white kid in the Speed Racer movie, like John Goodman?
was it?
Because they even shot that as an anime.
Yeah, I don't know. I never saw that, so no, it's not okay.
It was like Emil Hirsch or whatever that guy's name is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just wondering. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, that's...
Plus, ghosts don't have races, so that's racist to bring up when it comes to a ghost in a shell.
Ghosts don't have races? So
some
like,
kind of snail ghost.
But like when a white guy dies, is he not like a white guy ghost?
Well, everyone's white when they're a ghost.
Trying to spook up some
Whoa,
Starbucks?
Hey, watch the racist language. Jesus Christ.
We'll cut that out.
This is all cut.
Yeah, why are you always trying to push a racial talk during every
when
intro
do I
the
push
podcast?
Racial talk?
You're getting a little problematic when you're talking about Ang Lee, and
I don't think that's accurate. Well, we used to, our first like 7 podcasts, we had the beef gate, which was like to get to the podcast itself, you had to get through like some very dick centric observations. And then somehow we drifted into, like, race-centric observations.
Yeah, we're really trying to just go through and alienate as many people
yeah.
as
well,
possible.
Well, it's basically, it's like filtering out the perfect listener. It says, if you get through all this, then you're going to have a good-ass time.
Yeah.
And if you don't like all this, then you're wasting your time to begin with.
And you're a weirdo.
Yeah. We don't like your kind.
Ugh, getting problematic again.
Well, I mean, you're a type of opinions. I mean... Opinions are racially agnostic also.
So yeah, Handmaiden, I guess, I don't know if, was that
four
a
stars?
Good plot out of 5?
I heard class-based social maneuvering, I heard con man intrigue, and I heard the most graphic sex scene ever filmed. That sounds like, a 4-star film to me.
Yeah, that's 5-star. Yeah, no, I thought it was excellent. If you like these guys' movies, definitely go see it.
Well, if we can transition then from a movie that will guaranteed give you a boner to a movie that will prevent you from getting a boner for 2 weeks after you see it, Chan-wook Park's Old Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Solid film.
Yeah. Probably his seminal film. I'm not even sure what that word means, but...
It means seminal. It's semen based.
One of his Vengeance trilogy, that is what really I think he's known for.
Oh yeah, I would say that most people in the U.S. at least, if they know him as a director, is from Old Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now have you seen any of the other of the Vengeance trilogies, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance?
I have. I've seen all of them. I haven't seen the other two in a while. So
I hadn't seen
vague memories of them.
Yeah, I saw Old Boy first, and then Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, which is actually the first one he made. And then Lady Vengeance I saw quite a lot long time later, but I would say even with all that, Old Boy's the one that probably stuck in my head the most.
Yeah, I remember just being like the tightest of all of them. Like
yeah.
I feel Lady Vengeance kind of meanders a little bit, I thought.
It kind of reaches, yeah. I mean, just in terms of what I can remember from all of them, my memories of Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is just really a bare few things. And my memories of Lady Vengeance are also just a really a bare few things.
And then mm-hmm. this one, I mean, maybe it's not that much, but it has like those, it just has, I guess, more to it. Like I kind of remember, I can remember the whole plot, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas I really can't tell what happened. And I know Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, someone's like needs an organ, but I can't remember what.
Yeah,
what,
he gets his organ stolen.
He like,
he's pretty much on revenge to get it back.
I think he kidnapped, he tried to pull a Fargo. He tried to do like a nice kidnapping, but because he was deaf, he accidentally like let the girl drown or something. And that sparked vengeance from the dad.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's a deaf mute. I forgot about that.
I honestly had forgotten about that until like 14 seconds ago.
That's a major part of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he tries to sell his kidney, whatever. We're not talking about that one. I do remember Sympathy for Lady of Vengeance being the
grueling?
Most visually... Grueling, yes, but maybe the most visually striking of the three of them.
They're all pretty visually striking, though. This guy loves to strike a fucking image.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he's reaching his peak in Handmaiden, too. That movie looks just so awesome.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Oldboy just... It's very gritty and... A lot of like dark rooms.
It's a real well, rooms. It's a real noir kind of story.
A noir-dwar?
Noir-dwar, yeah. I mean, between the kind of dark, just the cinematography to the hard-boiled mystery, very gritty violence, and the monotone, or at least the subdued narration throughout. Classic-ass noir.
Yeah, definitely classic noir style. Came out in 2003, based on a manga of the same name.
I think it's a manga.
Manga? I always say manga.
I think it's a manga.
Manga. For a long time.
I've never read one, folks, so don't...
Yeah, don't think we have.
Yeah,
I know you do.
Give us a fucking break.
I guess the plot, real quick, main character, Odai Su, is imprisoned.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and just say all the character names?
Oh, man.
What are they?
Main character is Odai Su. The antagonist, Lee Woo Jin, played by Yuji Tai. Struggling.
You know, the weird thing is, like, they write them differently, because I have it written down as Jaitai Yu and Wu Jin Lee.
Right, and I'm pretty sure we tried to figure this out on another pod and came to a conclusion, and I forgot that conclusion.
Well, even Chan Wook Park, I basically throw those three syllables in the air, and then, like, whenever I try to remember what the director's name is, there are times when I've thought his name was Park Chan Wook, and I don't know if that's, like, equally legitimate.
Yeah, we're really showing our ignorance here, but in the Wikipedia, like, you know, usually they refer to the person as their last name after giving them the full name, and it says Chan Wook, so, like, Chan Wook stated that he named the character Odai So to remind the viewer of Oedipus, so I'm guessing it's Park Chan Wook.
Well, throughout the movie, at least, they say Odai So.
Right. I don't know if they ever just call him O. The only other main character, I guess, that matters too much is Mido, the love interest.
Mido? I can't remember what they called her.
We're good at this.
A little cutie.
Yeah, she's cutie. Cutie with no booty. Just the way
she's
I like
itty bitty. That pancake butt.
Yeah, just like Mama used to make. So the main character, Odai Su, is imprisoned in a cell that resembles a hotel room for 15 years without knowing the reason why or who captured him or really anything. But they keep him alive. They feed him. He has TV to keep him busy, I guess. And then one day he's released. And then he's pretty much the rest of the movie is him trying to figure out who captured him and why.
Yeah, and there's a real cat and mouse game because it seems that whoever captured him wants him to find out things.
Yeah, he's going through slowly, like getting little clues here and there, and it just kind of builds and builds and builds until it gives you like the big release at the end.
As it should.
Yeah.
That's what makes what it a it? Seminal film.
Seminal. Yeah, it has, I guess we're in total spoiler territory now.
Oh, yeah, we're deep. We're deep in absolute territory.
Definitely has one of the best twists, I think.
I would say this is the best twist I think I've ever seen as far as, like, the first viewing impact. Like, your ears are just, like, ringing from it for basically ever.
And yeah, and, like, on top of it, too, not only is it, like, such a shock twist, it's such, like, a brutal twist.
Yeah, it is.
And it, like, doesn't hold anything back, and it doesn't coddle you as the audience member. It just, like, I'm going to dump all this on you, deal with it.
Yeah, so the twist of the movie is after this entire movie, and, I mean, it's definitely, this movie is much better the first time you see it. It's still good watching it again, but the first time you see it, it's such a ride because you're so in Odesu's boots, and you're like, I want this guy to get revenge. You know, you can't lock someone up for 15 years. That's bullshit. And you get great, you really are with him as he, you know, uses that hammer to, like, torture information out of his captor. And then he has that amazing hammer fight scene in the hallway where he just...
That corridor scene, yeah.
Yeah, he just fights his way through, like, 12 guys and gets really beaten up during it. But it's just, like, it's kind of like a Kill Bill feeling where you're, like, so, you know, with this guy. So he just gets beaten and bruised but pushes and pushes and pushes. And the fucking smarmy jackass who is behind it all is, like, so smug through the whole movie. It's just like you want to, you know, catch him and strangle him. It's like, I don't know, it's like chasing a leprechaun or something. He just keeps like getting away. And so when he finally gets to the end and he figures out, oh, you captured me because I found out you were fucking your sister. And now I'm going to have my revenge. And they set it up with Mido says, make him kneel at Odesu's feet. And it's like, yeah, we're going to get that. He's going to kneel at his feet. And instead, the rug gets pulled out from under him. And he says, it's not about why I kidnapped you. It's why I let you go. And he let him go after 15 years because that was enough time for his daughter to grow up and be unrecognizable. And then he could fall in love with her and fuck her. And then...
So brutal.
I know. It's just like... It's...
Like, what a twisted twist.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of twists, I mean, I think what's great about it is it's kind of similar to, like, the Empire Strikes Back twist, where it just kind of pulls the character's whole, like, or the twist, I guess it's not so much a twist, but in, like, 1984, when they, Winston Smith is in there, and he's feeling, like, the righteous, you know, defender of liberty, and then the guy plays back the recording where he admitted that, you know, to achieve his goals, he'd be willing to, like, pour acid in a child's face and do any number of horrible things. So it kind of just pulls, like, you know, the whole momentum of the character as a hero out from under him. And just, like, I mean, that's kind of what makes it so devastating. I thought a bit about why twists work and why they don't. And I think the fact that this one kind of changes the whole, kind of everything that came before, but not in a cheap way. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think a lot of times movies set up twists and then when it's revealed, it hasn't built itself up on a strong enough foundation, so it feels unearned. It's like it's predicated on knowledge that you couldn't have had and like wouldn't have ever come to.
Well, like I was Whereas thinking this of one, like... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, this one does a decent job at like doing pretty subtle hints throughout, because once Odesu gets out, one of the first things he does, he goes to this sushi bar, and it's where he meets Maido, and she has like a very like unnatural attraction to him, since he's like an older unwashed man who just comes into her place and eats a live squid. And then she takes, like, such a liking to him and, like, brings him into her house and just kind of, like, goes along with everything that all the crazy shit he's trying to do. That you can kind of see, like, well, that's kind of weird. And, that plays into the reveal later that she and he were both under, you know, some mild hypnosis to help push along this twisted, incestuous romance that the antagonist wanted as his ultimate revenge.
Yeah, and I think it also plays off of, like, kind of the tropes that you'd expect. So I think that, you know, even though it is, like, in the real world, it would be very weird for him to her to take him in. The fact that you're kind of used to, like, extremely cute girls latching onto the protagonist in a movie for no real reason, and, you know, they do give you that little bit of justification where she talks about him hallucinating about ants because he's so lonely, and then you cut to her being lonely on the train and having that extremely weird hallucination of, like, a giant ant waving at her on the train. So you kind of get a sense of, oh, okay, so she's just lonely too, so they're kind of like birds of a feather. They have the same issues. But, like, I'm thinking of, like, a twist that I hated was, like, The Dark Knight Rises, which kind of undermines the whole movie. At the end of that movie, they reveal that the kid who escaped the prison, that you, the whole time, they very heavily suggest, to the point of there's no reason to expect it's not the case, is Tom Hardy, Bane.
Right.
And then at the end, they're like, oh, actually, it was Marion Cotillard, Talia al Ghul, a character whose name you didn't hear until now. And there's just, like...
Yeah, that's a good example, too, because that movie, like, oh boy, it's not really pushing you in any one direction. You're just kind of along for the ride, and then you have the twist. Whereas Dark Knight's, like you said, like, it's pretty much telling you this kid is Bane. So you have no reason to question that. And they're like, oh, whoops, we lied to you.
Yeah, and it's like, also...
You don't lie to me.
Like, the twist in The Dark Knight seems, like, so unnecessary because there's not, like, a mystery. Like, the Bane character already hates Batman and has a motivation. In this case, there's, like, a real mystery that you're kind of waiting to unlock about why this specific kind of, like, why lock the guy for 15 years? Oh, because he blabbed about your sister. Well, why not just kill him? You know, why do this specific thing? So it really makes, I guess a good twist makes the movie make more sense, whereas a bad twist makes it make much less sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to have the twist and then you're like, wait, what? Like, that doesn't work. You'd rather it be like, oh, yeah, now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, I would agree with that. Great twist. I mean, I was putting other examples. The obvious ones, like Sixth Sense, Fight Club.
I think Sixth Sense is a super... I think Sixth Sense and Fight Club are both, in a way, better than this one, because I think that they make the movie more enjoyable to watch over once you know it, whereas I think this twist, I think it's actually much harder to watch it afterwards because you're so just waiting for everything awful to happen. True. And so, like, the sex scene with Maido and Odesu, when you watch it the first time, it's like, you know, kind of pleasant the way that most sex scenes in movies are. It's like, oh, the hero and, you know, the love interest are getting together. That's pleasant. And then
definitely like the sex scene at Handmaiden. Whoa.
And this one, it's just like, you're just like, can we skip this? Can we move on?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, once you know how that sausage is made, you don't want to see it again.
Yeah, exactly.
I had first seen this movie, I guess, pretty close to when it came out, and I'm not really sure how I found it.
I would say probably around 2005 is when I saw it.
Yeah, so did you introduce it to me? Probably.
Maybe. I don't know.
Do you remember where you found it?
I have no idea how I even saw it. If it was like one of those like Blockbuster pre-Netflix kind of like rental by mail things. I do remember it was one of the kind of first like Asian foreign films I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah, me too.
So I actually have no idea how I saw it. I assume that I rented the DVD somehow.
Yeah, and it was bolstered by the fact that no one really knew about it. So
yeah,
I mean, that was like middle school, high school days. You're like, ooh, this is like finding a band no one's heard of.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel cooler for like having it, and it's like, oh, it's mine.
Well, it was kind of like, didn't we see both Anchorman and Napoleon Dynamite in theaters together? And then it was like, no one was talking about it, and then eventually, like, everyone was talking about it. It was just like, oh, okay. I might have been much more annoyed seeing this movie after everyone was talking about it than seeing it when no one was, and you could kind of come up with not only your own opinion, but I do feel like the early 2000s were kind of like point zero for like having that hipster enjoyment of seeing something before other people knew about it.
Yeah, this is pre-Twitter age.
Yeah.
Where you could see a movie like this and not know that anyone else saw it because there's not like pre-Reddit too, probably.
Yeah. And it was just, I don't know, I just remember that was kind of like the big thing was kind of, like, I remember having a real appetite for finding things that were off, you know, off the grid because there's just something more exciting about it in that way.
Yeah, and it's so much harder to do that now, even though I still try to.
Yeah, it is.
But I mentioned when I first saw it, because I saw it way back then, and then I think, like, it was on Netflix for a long time, I think it still is. And I remember trying to watch it again because I remember loving it so much, and like I couldn't figure out the subtitles or something, so it would only play dubbed, and I can't do that.
Oh, dub sucks.
So I don't think I really watched it much until about a month ago or so, when I watched it again in preparation to watch Handmaiden. So I kind of forgot a lot of the twist.
Oh yeah.
Like, I remember it being really fucked up and having a major twist, and I remember, like, the incest part with the antagonist.
Oh, you didn't remember the father-daughter incest, though?
Yeah, I think I might have forgotten
that. Oh, that's kind of good, then. That's more enjoyable to watch it when you don't know that.
Yeah, exactly. So, the sex scene's still a little awkward just because it's, like, it is pretty graphic.
Yeah, and I mean, also, it's just kind of a little bit weird given how much older he is.
Yeah, the age gap is a little odd. But,
and it starts off with her complaining about how much it hurts, and it's like...
Yeah, and she kind of like sounds like she's crying. not too fun.
Yeah.
But then it's like, oh god, it's mega way worse.
I did love how fucking cute it was. She like explains early on that like, obviously I brought you back to my house because I do want to bang, but I'm not ready yet. But when I do, even if I say no, I just want you to go for it. And like she like puts her fists out like a... I don't know, like an anime teen, Power Ranger squad kind of girl or something.
Yeah, that still made me really uncomfortable, though.
Well, it's like, such a weird thing to say to somebody.
And then, so like maybe my own like unfair biases, but like watching their whole relationship unfold, where she's just like way into him and kind of like, you know. What do you call it? Kowtowing, I guess, to all of his needs and pleasures. I was like, well, is this just kind of like some creepy dude fantasy? You know,
you gotta admit the guy is fascinating, though. He's got a... I think they probably could have given her more background, but it is easy to understand why she'd be interested in like his like mystery story.
Yeah, because I guess they do build that she is, you know, lonely herself and probably kind of bored. So
yeah,
this super interesting guy comes to her life.
Yeah, who's got, like, a revenge that you can get into.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that. They don't really linger on her reading his journal, which I think is supposed to be where the seed of her fascination kind of really gestates, even though, like, they're hypnotized or whatever to, you know, be into each other anyway.
Yeah, so he keeps journals this entire time he's imprisoned, trying to figure out pretty much who could have done it to him. So he just goes through and, like, names everyone he's wronged.
And it's apparently like a ton of people. Like, how many people would you write down? I would have like three guys.
I
thought about this too.
If I was there for 15 years, I could probably think of more than I'd like to imagine I could have. But
maybe, but I don't think I've wronged anybody that I could imagine they would like want to like even punch me in the face, you know?
No, that'd be extreme.
So like, I was mean to this guy on Twitter. I was mean to this guy on Facebook.
Ragged on this guy on Reddit.
Yeah.
Yeah, these days you could probably fill more books just from strangers online.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying in terms of my background, I don't think I've really like caused someone like need for revenge, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I do like that this movie is like, you know, we talked about Arrival last week, which I'd read someone was writing about it, and I found very few opinions that kind of match mine, at least. But someone's talking about how it's a movie about certainty and how, like, good sci-fi really should be about, you know, make you think. And I think Old Boy, although maybe it's slightly sci-fi, but with the hypnotism,
But yeah, and like the whole, so like the prison he's in is like a business, I guess.
Yeah.
Where you could come and take vengeance on people and have them stay.
But that could exist now. Like, it's not like a requirement of like some scientific thing that doesn't exist. But anyway.
Yeah, I guess there's not much psi.
It does. It's very heavy on the phi. But it does really make you think about the nature of transgressions against another person. The character Lee Woo Jin, the thing that he repeats is that, you know, a grain of sand or a stone, they both sink in water. And so when you get to what Odesu's actual transgression was, it was just mentioning almost in passing while someone helped him pack for a move, hey, this guy was like banging his sister.
Mm-hmm.
But like that was enough because of the basically the fallout of that was the girl, you know, got a phantom pregnancy based on the rumor, and then he killed her. They kind of did kind of a mutual homicide/suicide, and so it had a massive impact. And so like the nature of transgressions, the nature of revenge, like how do you make up for that? I think the movie denies you the revenge you're expecting at the beginning, because Odesu doesn't get his revenge, and he actually he cuts his own tongue off and debases himself, begging the guy not to tell Maido or Mido or whatever her name is the truth.
His daughter.
And I mean, yeah. Really fucks his whole life up even worse than if he had just like escaped right at the end instead of confronting him.
Yeah, if he just got out and just went about his life.
Yeah. But as a viewer, you do get the satisfaction in a bit in that after Odesu, he's so kicked when he's down. Even after cutting his tongue out, the guy hands him the remote that he said stops his heart. And instead, the remote activates a tape recorder that plays the bugged audio of them fucking the first time. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ, dude.
Yes. Yeah, it's your lowest point.
Yeah, but after that, it actually shows you, finally, it kind of breaks the shell of the Woo Jin Lee character and shows how devastating it was for him and his sister going through that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, in a way, like you could almost mathematically set up a good revenge story and it's just create a massive imbalance, because that's really all it is. I mean, if you're watching, a comeback football game is essentially a revenge story. It's watching someone get beaten into paste in the first quarter, and then you want to see in the fourth quarter they come back and beat the other guy into paste. So, I mean, if you had a revenge story about a guy who, you know, raped your mom, you'd want at the end for that guy, you know, the rapist to get his throat slit, or, I mean, you probably don't want to see him get raped because that's just disgusting, but you want to balance the scales. I mean, that's basically what the whole revenge story is.
Yeah.
So in this one, your desire to have the scales balanced is kind of turned on its head by revealing that the character you've been rooting for is actually in the wrong. But then it beats him into pace so much more. It's so like you feel his humiliation. And so they kind of do give you a bit of release by showing, well, you know what? Here's how imbalanced the scales were before you even started watching the movie.
Yeah.
Because it's also a revenge story for Woo Jin Lee. It kind of, that's more or less what the reveal is.
Right, because he, pretty much about the same amount of time, has been dealing with his tragedy of his dead sister, who he kind of was his fault.
Yeah, but
and then until that's all pre-story.
Yeah, but until the last shot of how much it devastated him, you do get the sense that it's kind of like a Game of Thrones Lannister thing where they're banging and they're just like, you know, dickheads and they don't care about anything, and they're, you know, he killed her.
Yeah, because he's a rich playboy.
Yeah,
in the movie. So yeah, but I mean, even that though, you don't even get any satisfaction there, because he ends up Legion Wu ends up shooting himself in the head.
I feel like that is in a way satisfying though. It kind of closes the books. You're like, all right, you guys both have your lives devastated by this.
But I mean, some people could have found satisfaction in Lee getting his revenge on the main character. And then he could have walked away and been like, fine, but they even go so far as to have him just kill himself, because there's like, no one can leave here winning and satisfied.
Yeah, no, it's really, I mean, it's devastating, and it is a good, like, I feel like the best revenge stories should kind of reveal the all-destroying nature of revenge. Like, oh, that's the other... I was trying to think of another twist movie that I fucking hated the twist. Magnificent Seven, the remake, where at the very end of the story, they reveal, Denzel Washington's Sam Chisholm, actually, his whole family was, like, murdered by this guy who you hated anyway because he's a bastard through the whole movie, and then he gets revenge by killing the guy. And it's like, that's another, like, do not do in terms of building a revenge story. It's just, or a twist. It's like, you can't reveal the whole backstory of the twist, like, as the twist. You can't just reveal random backstory because it doesn't have time to gestate in our heads.
Right. And I mean, the old boy, the end scene just keeps bringing you down and down and lets it all settle into your brain. But yeah, the Magnificent Seven, it was totally unnecessary.
No, it was. I mean, I think that the good thing about twist is you want to be set on a course and be like really, I mean, it's almost like momentum. It's like you got to be powering towards that end goal and then like, you know, Peanuts, like just pull the football out and watch you fly. And that's the twist. Whereas the Magnificent Seven, you're just kind of lolling about because you don't even know. You kind of dislike the guy, and you're like, well, he's just doing that to be a good guy, whatever. And then at the end, it's like, no, I actually have a really personal reason to hate you, and I'm going to get revenge. Boom, I got it. I was like, wait, I didn't have time to get any momentum there. I just heard that information.
Yeah, and when you were starting this, I asked you whether or not it is a dick move to reveal that a movie has a twist, even if you don't say what the twist is.
I think it can be. I mean, I remember I watched, I think, The Score with De Niro.
Never seen it. Don't you fucking ruin it for me.
It's not that good.
Now I know there's a twist. God damn it.
Yeah, it's Edward Norton and Robert De Niro, and I think that the trailers were like, and a twist you'll never see coming. And I was like, well, now I'm looking for a twist. And I mean, that's the thing. As soon as you look for a twist, most of the time, if you can't see it coming, it's because if you can't see it coming when you're looking for a twist, then it's probably because it makes no sense. So if it's a good, grounded in the story twist, then you have to not be expecting it.
Is the twist of Score that nobody scores?
Score, score, score. Someone's got score. I feel like the old boy twist is fucked up enough that you might not think of it even.
That's what I was going to say. I think it carries enough weight in itself that, I mean, plus the whole movie's kind of building towards some big reveal.
Yeah,
you don't
know
what this guy's motivation is. So you kind of know there's going to be a reveal at the end, and then it just, like, doubles down and has the twist on it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I mentioned Sixth Sense of Fight Club. I watched both those movies already having known what the twist was. And, I mean, I think that those are just good enough movies that didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I'm sure it's better to watch the movie knowing nothing.
Yeah.
I think in any case.
I think I watched them both without knowing that. I think the funny thing about twists is they have a way of seeming to be much more. It kind of reminds you how slow your brain processes things because, you know, it has more of a sense of like, I always remember a movie that has a twist, like being like one word was the twist. And like in the span of a second, the whole thing changed. Whereas usually it's about a 5-minute scene.
Yeah.
Where they kind of explain the twist and it slowly dawns on you. Like I'm thinking of, like even The Prestige I watched.
Didn't see it, but I know there's a twist.
There is a twist, but in a weird way, that movie, the twist, you almost see come. Like, I remember it being a twist the first time I saw it. The second time I saw it, the twist is something that you kind of almost assume like halfway through the movie. So it doesn't really hit as hard. Well, I guess there are more than one twist in that movie, but anyway. But it is still a thing that is like, it's a much more, you know, go through the process of explaining the twist to people. But, you know, your memory of it is just is like, it's a bam. It's like, bam.
I have a weird memory story for Fight Club that I don't even really know if it's true anymore, but it seems so real in my brain. So I'd never seen Fight Club, And then in this memory, I had a dream where I was seeing the twist of Fight Club.
Hmm.
But it was totally different. Like, it was about aliens or something. And then in reality, I woke up, turned on the television at some point soon after waking up, and Fight Club was on, like, halfway through. So then I watched the twist.
Okay.
Before I'd seen the entire movie.
Oh, all right. That's weird.
It was very weird. And I'm pretty sure it didn't happen, but it's such a vivid memory in my brain that, like,
well,
I'm just convinced.
The weird thing about that movie, Rosie O'Donnell found it to be so fascist that, or like violent or whatever, that she revealed the twist on her show back when she had that show, the Rosie O'Donnell show. And it really pissed off Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. And I don't think that movie did that well in theaters.
No, I don't think it did either.
And I was like, yeah, that's kind of shitty to give away a twist just because you think
like while it was like still in theaters?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Just another reason to hate Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah, as if you needed another one. I mean, like, Donald Trump should really just campaign on hating Rosie O'Donnell, being against the TPP, and ruining Hamilton. And then be like,
yeah, I mean,
I can get behind this guy.
Terms, baby. Yeah.
3 for 3, son.
So we mentioned that it Old Boy is based on a manga.
Mm-hmm.
Manga. Did you look at the differences between the two, or?
No, I didn't look that up. That's your feel. That's your wheelhouse. Good. I hate that shit.
Yeah, I love this minutia that no one cares about. So in the manga, the main character, Odaisu, it's not the same name, but that character, once he's released, his motivation isn't really seeking revenge. According to Wikipedia, it's just like out of curiosity, he kind of follows the breadcrumb trail until it's kind of revealed what happens. But throughout the entirety,
yeah, it's way fucking worse.
Yeah, I mean, throughout the entirety, that character is apparently just like really calm and stoic. I mean, like, I don't know if it matters. He's like a younger guy, in they say in peak physical condition.
Underline.
Yes, it's very sexy. Thank you. But there's something interesting about that too. You know, if they were to keep that part of it in the movie, it'd be such a weird movie. Just watch a guy like kind of just going through the motions of seeking revenge without realizing.
Yeah, you'd have to cast Keanu Reeves at that point. No, one thing I really loved about the movie is that it stars an asshole. Like you cut to him before he gets kidnapped, and he's just a drunk who's like belligerent. And then throughout the movie, he does snap from. You know, he's desperate to find out why he's in the pit, basically. He, like, you know, flips incredibly quickly from begging to bargaining to threatening back to begging. And even at the very end, he does the same thing where he, you know, unleashes this epic threat where he's going to rip the guy limb from limb and there's going to be nothing left because I'm going to swallow every bit.
Yeah, geez.
And immediately after that, he starts, like, licking the guy's boots and be like, I'm sorry, please, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he cuts his tongue out.
Yeah, so it's kind of a fascinating character, though.
Yeah.
Because he has passion.
That end scene is so hard to watch, too, just because he goes through all that motion without the antagonist saying anything.
Yeah.
So the whole time watching, I'm just like, shut the fuck up and just, like, let this guy talk.
Yeah, why don't you listen to some Kenny Rogers? You got to know when to hold him and know when to fold him, buddy.
So apparently also the manga just... It seems like it's pretty different. So kudos to...
He's actually a young boy.
The young boys. It's not really very violent or brutal.
Oh, fuck that.
I know. They know how to make the movie watchable. There's only one guy who dies in the entire comic. And that's just like the bad guy's crony, who dies at the end and after like a pretty badass fight.
Oh, yeah. That guy was pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of just kept throwing him, though.
I kind of expected
maybe a little more, but he was just kind of chucking him.
You can always tell the tough guy in like a karate movie because he's got white hair. Yeah. and he wears a like one-piece track suit.
Yeah, and he's also the guy who doesn't do anything like the beginning, like in the...
Doesn't say anything.
Like in The Simpsons when the Mafia is fighting the Yakuza. He's like, but that one little guy isn't doing it. He's not even moved. And as soon as he moves, that's going to be really amazing.
And the second he leaves.
Yeah.
But also, the girl isn't even the guy's daughter. So,
what's the twist?
Well, I didn't look through it enough to see like how that really changed everything. But I mean, they still use that girl as a way to have surveillance on the mm-hmm. Odaiso character. But I guess that part of it just they don't have that part of the twist.
Oh, I think it just sounds like Garon Tsuchiya, Chun Hyung Lim, and Jo Young Hwang and Chan-wook Park fucking did an epic job of translating this to film.
Well, the best part too, like the whole reason for starting all this shit, you know, in the movie, like we said, Odaisu sees the antagonist fucking his sister and then spills the beans to his dumpy friend.
Yeah.
With the big mouth. But in the comic, it's just because he brings shame on the antagonist because he weeps for him.
What?
In class. Like, he's very embarrassed, and then the main character... he pities him. And that, like, ruins the guy's self-esteem.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty fucking weak.
So it's something that I feel like definitely wouldn't translate as well.
Yeah,
that's true. Especially to an American audience.
That's what I thought about this from, like, you know, an anthropological point of view. And it's, like, it's weird how much of this hinges on, you know, like, if aliens, you know, had to watch this, they'd be like, all right, what are the problems here? It's like, well, you know, fucking your daughter's bad and fucking your sister's bad. And, you know, this, just those kind of notions. And then even at one point, you know, the curator or whatever, the manager of that torture hotel or imprisonment hotel, Wu Jin Lee cuts his hand off and gives it to Odaisu just to kind of prove that he's been listening in on him. And then the prison manager guy acts like Odaisu is now the enemy of his enemy.
Yeah,
and
Wu Jin
then points out, like, you're an idiot for believing that. Why would cutting off his hand, you know, like, you pull his teeth out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cutting out his hand, like, I gave him that building for his hand, you know. And so it's kind of interesting, like, the way that it makes you think about, you know, why humans would ally with others, why they would try to get revenge on others, you know, what's, you know, abhorrent in our society and obviously Korean society as well. I did have a memory. That was one thing I remember differently. I thought that Odaisu, when he saw the brother and sister, he just kind of like peeked and they were already just like banging like on the table. And it was just like a really short scene of like, all right, they're banging. I got that. But it's like a really drawn out, intimate scene. That's also really weird because she like really resists a lot. And that mixed with like Odaisu like rushing Maido in the bathroom. This is like, I don't know what's considered like rape in Korea.
Right. I had those same questions and I wasn't sure, like I said, if this was like some kind of male fantasy thing that was like pushing the limits or if it's like a little bit different.
Yeah, because she apologizes to him like for like resisting when he comes at her in the bathroom.
Maido does, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, if I opened the door while my wife was using the bathroom, she'd, you know, throw a knife at me. Like, much less, like, trying to get some while she's on the toilet. Just, like, and much less they're strangers.
Well, at least that part, like, is later kind of explained by the, you know, a little bit of hypnosis. Which is maybe
I just assumed it was because he'd been 15 years in the cell. So he's just like...
That's... You'd expect that, but... Her like kind of taking it pretty well.
Yeah.
right after that scene is when she isn't it that when she says like that she wants to bang him but like,
yeah.
she's not ready.
She's just it was just the wrong
so
time.
Like, what
it's
the
like,
fuck?
I mean, understandable. That's the wrong time to do that.
Yeah, you don't need a hot Carl at that time.
Poop on your boobies.
Oh man.
Yeah, so, I mean, the only negative thing that I had about the movie is that, and that was the same way I felt at the beginning, was that I don't think that Wu Jin Lee's plan would really work. It was hinging so much upon hypnotism.
Yeah, the hypnotism seems like a bit of a cheat.
Yeah, it is a bit of that, like, puppet master. But I feel like just the style of the movie is a slightly askew from reality kind of world that they exist in, and I think that you get some points just from being a foreign film because you are kind of on uneasy footing about, you know, like we said, like stuff like, you know, what is like consent there and how does that mm-hmm. work for them? And mm-hmm. I mean, the violence, it's like, you know, you kind of assume, all right, the cops aren't being involved at any point. Like he doesn't even bother trying to go to the police and there's not a real reason for it. So you just kind of, you're in this world, you're in this imaginary world to some degree. So you kind of like, all right, yeah, sure. You know, hypnotism, like this guy orchestrated this. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking about the movie, it does seem a lot more like magical and fictional, but I guess like you said, I mean, all of that could technically happen in real life. There could be yeah. a guy who owns a building and yeah. presents people for money.
But it did have like a, it had a novelistic kind of feel to it, like just little details like him eating one dumpling after another, because he'll never forget the taste. I love those small details of how to like...
Yeah.
That's to track the guy down.
Yeah, that was a good touch.
Hmm.
I thought another thing. Oh, I was gonna say that corridor scene.
Of course, it's so fucking good.
All the fighting is really well choreographed.
Yeah, because it's not really cool. Super like cha 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 cha. It's very like it's brutal. Yeah, it's brutal, and there's a lot of like pauses to get your breath and to like smart over an injury, and you know just pausing yeah. because you're fainting an attack before you do it, and
it's very raw.
Yeah, it is raw. I mean, the guy just gets some good hits in, though. I mean, it's so, like that first attack when he has the fight with the kids over the cigarette and he does that jumping punch.
Yeah,
it's like yes. So,
it's so good. Yeah, and it all set up so well because they have him in the hotel room just punching the wall. Yeah.
He's got flat knuckles for the whole movie too.
Yeah, and he's just practicing, and then he even has the inner monologue that they play a couple of times, which is like...
I think about that all the time. Yeah, it's like, would 10 years of imaginary fighting, you know, be applicable to real life? Apparently it is, or whatever.
Okay, good. So, you know, 20-plus years of pretending I could win every fight, maybe I could actually win if I ever get in one.
Yeah.
I have another point to make. Oh, no, just about the corridor scene, too. The only,
in fact, only thing that... You know what else? Like Chris Farley interviews? That was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You remember that scene?
But no, that was the I don't know if it was mentioned at all, but did you watch that show, the Daredevil show on Netflix?
Yeah, that corridor scene in that show was absolutely the best part of that, too.
Yeah, like they had to have watched this.
Oh, yeah, it must have been. Just, I mean, because the pacing of it was so, just, you know, one guy comes in, he gets beaten up, and, you know, Daredevil takes a hit, and then he knocks mm-hmm. another guy down. And very brutal, very struggling, you can tell.
Yeah, one take, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like the same kind of, like, confined space fighting.
Yeah, that was definitely an homage.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, this...
I mean, there's movie. No doubt that Odesu is the hardest man in this movie, right?
Yeah, there's not too much you could argue against that. I was really trying to think, but...
Outside the box, no, everyone... Because he even gets that guy in the ear, the, like, invincible bodyguard with the scissors. He gets him in the ear with the scissors, so it's like, ha-ha.
Oh, yeah, Dude, he wrecks shit. And it's so great, too, because, yeah, like, it's all just very... like natural, like he finds a hammer and then that's his weapon to torture people by ripping their teeth out, but also break some limbs in the corridor.
And he uses it like a hammer too, like they get him on the ground and they're like kicking him and he just starts hammering their toes
yeah.
to kind of like yeah. get some space.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the hardest man. I mean, yeah, he did 15 years in the hotel room and came out swinging.
Oh yeah, that's no no pussy Andy Dufresne shit.
Yeah, how long was he in there?
He was in, I think, just shy of 20 years, and also very fond of hammers.
There you go. We'll do that movie next. Not really.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hardest Man, that was pretty easy. Probably the easiest one we've had to date. Is there any reason to visit our script doctor?
Why don't you pull him up, see if you can get him on the line.
All right, let's go see my call. Hello?
Hello there.
Hey, script doctor.
Hey, I'm the script doctor. How are you guys doing? The Hardy Boys.
We're pretty good. We're doing pretty good. I can't speak for Jared. I don't know where he... I think he went to the bathroom.
No, I'm right here. I'm still good.
Oh, hey, he's back.
Hey, Script Doctor.
So you got any prescriptions for us today?
Well, this was the hardest movie I've ever tried to do. It's pretty clean bill of health all the way through. I had one thought as I was going through this, though, to try to make a prescription.
Yeah.
You might notice the whole movie is in Korean.
That's correct. It's a Korean movie.
Kind of hard to follow. A little hard to follow what the folks are saying. So my prescription would be, why don't you make this movie in English? And oh, yeah? While you're at it, you could go ahead and cast maybe a more relatable actor to American audiences. Maybe one of those guys that adds a little 10%, you know, to every film he's in.
Who are you thinking?
Like a Josh Brolin type.
That's very interesting. Who do you think would be the man to helm a movie like this?
I feel like you'd need somebody who adds maybe 1% to every film he directs. You know,
you got 11%.
Yeah, a good Spike Lee type, I think.
That's very interesting that you would say that, Script Doctor, because I think they did that exact thing, and it failed miserably.
You got me. I actually... I was trying to promote a film that I did some punch-up work on. I worked on the old boy remake in America.
The American remake? You were a punch-up? You were the Diablo Cody?
I punch up a lot of scripts. I have never punched up Diablo Cody. Those rumors are unfounded.
Wish you would. So, yeah, that one was a big flop. But thanks for coming by, Script Doctor. And,
absolutely.
Giving us terrible advice.
Well, it's always good to be on the show, boys. Have a good one.
Yeah, I hate you.
Thank God
he's gone.
Yeah, that was really miserable. Terrible advice.
Yeah,
although
I
it's understandable. It's a really airtight movie. It's hard to improve,
yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, I was putting a lot on him to come up with anything, but he had a good answer.
You are hard on the Script Doctor. Although I guess I hate him
so much.
If you come here, you got to be hard.
There you go. He raised a good point, though. Not a good point, but a point that the movie did have a remake in American.
Yeah, have you had any interest in seeing that?
I mean, to stay true to my theory, only slight interest because Josh Brolin's the lead character and Spike Lee is the director.
Sam Jackson is in there. Does he give you anything? I'd give a good 3% for Sam Jackson.
Yeah, he's tough because he's just in a lot of bad movies.
Yeah, he's in so much shit, but I feel like he's still always slightly interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three to five is probably.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen his part of a movie and been like, maybe RoboCop. He plays like a Bill O'Reilly type in RoboCop.
He plays Bill O'Reilly in RoboCop?
Yeah, he plays like a Bill O'Reilly type. He's like got a really gaudy cable news show that's basically always recommending for like fascist police measures, and it's just doesn't really work for me.
Is that what they base those peer or credit card commercials on? Fuck that guy.
Which one? He's the what's in your wallet guy, right?
Yeah, whatever one that is.
I don't want to fuck that up, because didn't he lay into some guy for, the Allstate guy? Did some, like entertainment news anchor confuse him for, like, the Allstate, like, 24 president guy?
I thought some anchor just confused him for another black actor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. But, like, another commercial. I don't know if it was, like, a Progressive insurance actor, but the... Who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit? But yeah, the American old boy, 41% of Rotten Tomatoes. That's actually better than I thought it was.
Ew, I would kind of like to see it just to see how it translates.
Yeah, because I feel like you can't translate it, but I don't know. It's worth giving it a try.
I feel, part of me wonders if like just like a straight translation would just be terrible just because like, you wonder if some of these movies, like, the people in their country, because they don't have, like, a filter of, like, well, maybe that makes sense in Korea. If, if you know, some of these are just kind of, like, middle-of-the-road, like, action movies to them.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, I feel like it's shot in a very artistic way, and it's... To me, this seems like a cut above, but you just wonder, If it's just like, if they did this exact same script but with Josh Brolin in it, if it would be like, yeah, it's just some, you know, random trash revenge movie, some pulp movie.
Yeah, I just feel like we said it's you're kind of in another world already because you're watching a foreign film. That I feel like so much of the stuff would be just so problematic. Like, I don't get
what would he eat instead of a squid. So, like, bring me a live chicken. I'm gonna eat the whole chicken.
I mean, is it? Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like.
I mean, what else do we even keep live? Like lobster, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it could be a lobster. That'd be fucking hard. Be pinned to a lobster head.
That'd be badass. You're going to just take a crunching bite out of it, and then there's tacos inside.
What a way to end it. So, yeah, I think
that'll do. What do we got for corrections?
For corrections today, last time we talked about Arrival, the movie, you said that the word for Sanskrit meant something dumb about cattle, but you're stupid and it's a Sanskrit word for war that means something for cattle.
Yeah, I meant to say the Sanskrit word for war. I said the word for Sanskrit. I feel like that's pedantic, though. People probably understood that.
Yeah, I definitely noticed it when you said it too, and it drove me a little crazy. Really? Like,
why'd you interrupt me? I interrupt you all the time on these.
Oh, I know. I think the flow is going too well. Speaking of fucking up my flow, though, the other, I don't know, it's not a correction or an admission, it's a fuck you. That'll be a new portion of it. The Yahoo Movies website that I was trying to get information from.
That you were struggling. I actually cut like 5 minutes of you just flopping around like a fish.
Yeah, maybe even more than that. It was because there's like the full article, and then for some reason there's a read more button, which you would usually put after maybe like the first paragraph or something.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find it because it was a bunch like hidden amongst millions of clickbait ads. And that just drove me fucking nuts.
Did you ever recover what like fantastic like point you were going to make?
I think the only point was that the chick died from a rock climbing accident or something.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, that was in the other part. The other stuff wasn't worthwhile. I think it was just saying real basic stuff like, oh, the book is different from the movie. Ooh. The book goes into more depth, duh, because it's a fucking book.
The book has slightly less Jeremy Renner in it, thus making it better.
The last thing here, I think, was that the first time I mentioned my percentage theory that I'm pretty sure I've taken from,
like, Amy Adams and Josh Brolin add like 10% to every movie they're in, and there are other actors like that, Michael Fassbender, naturally, maybe even 15% or
20%. Oh, man, that's really high for Fassbender. You just love seeing his dong.
Have you ever seen a bad movie with him?
Prometheus was probably bad.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. He was good in it,
though. But yeah,
I don't know if he added 20% to it, though. That's a good point.
But I claim that Amy Adams can add up to 50%.
50?
That's what I say on the pod. I haven't refined the numbers yet.
Yeah, you're high on your own supply at that point.
I gotta bring it back to the lab.
Yeah.
Especially because I forgot that Amy Adams was in Batman versus Superman.
And Man of Steel. Yeah.
Couldn't save those movies.
No.
I mean, 0 times 50% is still 0%, right, math guys?
Wah, wah, wah.
Call the math doctor in here. That asshole.
That's all we got,
yeah. You doing the goodbyes?
Yeah, so if you follow us on Twitter at HardMentToPlease, I'm kind of active on that now because I've paused my own Twitter activities due to just getting frustrated with Twitter. Send questions or hate mail to HardMentToPlease@gmail.com and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. We need more reviews and we need positive five stars ratings. So don't be a dickhead.
Just literally anything. Do anything.
Interact in any way.
Even if we get negative stars, that would still help, right? Because it would actually show the results then.
Don't give us negative reviews, please.
Yeah, it's true. Don't listen to me. I'm drunk.
Yeah. All right. Well, listener, it comes that time again where we have to just say we love you and good night.
We love you and we love the night.
We'll see you next time. Big theme in this movie at time.
What are we doing next? Yeah, whatever movie we're doing next, we'll see.
I think we're doing Nocturnal Animals featuring the 10% edition of Amy Adams and the 10% edition of Jake Gyllenhaal.
90% Jake Gyllenhaal. okay.
So we'll see you then.
Okay, bye.
Love you. Laughing and lying.